Today we're going to be working with cyclic compounds. And you know, if someone wouldn't mind turning the lights right back on, I brought some bottle sets. Sorry about that. It just makes more sense if I'm trying to show you bottle sets, you should be able to see the bottle sets. So this is the type of model that is available in the bookstore that we have available in the lab. Exactly the same type of model that I used back when I was an undergraduate. You get this box that's full of all of these different pieces, and the black ones are supposed to represent sp3 hybridized carbons. So if you take two of the black pieces and put them together in this way, then you can make a tetrahedron. Again, I recommend that you get these kinds of bottles because, for example, from Monday's lecture, where we were talking about Newman projection, if you were to look at the base of this tetrahedron, you can very clearly see the 120-degree angle I was trying to talk about when you do the projection. It's also useful for doing the types of things that we're going to be doing today, which is visualizing different forms of principally cyclohexane. Cyclohexane we talk a lot about because it's a very easy to study case of cyclic compounds. There's some very easy to describe geometry. And 5 and 6-membered rings tend to be the most common size rings that you find in organic compounds. And in fact, let's just start right there. Because you can make a cyclic alkane with as few as 3 carbons in it. If you only had 2 carbons, you've got ethane, and 2 points can't make a circle. But if you had 3 carbons, you could make cyclopropane. But this model would demonstrate to you what the difficulty in making cyclopropane would be, because I don't want to ruin my model, so I won't actually do it. But if you bought the models and tried to join these 3 carbons in a circle, it isn't going to go too terribly well. There's an awful lot of what's called angle strain that's involved. You can see that already these are puckering, and if I push too hard, they're going to break. Why is it that you would expect there would be a lot of stress in a system with only 3 carbons in a ring?
Unstable.
But why?
Because the stable angle is 109.5.
Because for sp3 hybridized carbon, the ideal angle is 109.5 degrees. If you had cyclopropane, then what would the angle between any two of the bonds be?
66.
Only 60 degrees. So this is, again, what is called angle strain. It is higher potential energy caused by distortion of bonds caused by deviation of molecular geometry from ideal bond angles. So again, for something like cyclopropane, only 60 degree angles would be possible. That's way off from 109.5, and that means that the bonds won't overlap as efficiently, the orbitals. So more orbital overlap produces a stronger bond. If you then try to bend the bonds where there's not as good an orbital overlap, that means the bonds are weaker. Weaker bonds means that not as much energy is released making the bonds. And so in putting that the other way around, that means effectively you're raising the energy of the system as you're distorting and acting like you're going to break these bonds. The situation gets a little bit better if you were to add one more carbon to it. So if I put 4 carbons together, you can see that I can almost make this model without bending it too extremely. Notice, though, that you don't necessarily automatically make perfect 90-degree angles because this is a 3-dimensional object, so it is able to pucker a little bit. But it's close enough to 90 degrees that, again, it's not going to be terribly favorable. By the time we get to cyclopentane, though, if we have 5 carbons, we can easily make a ring compound out of it with very little stress at all. And the molecule won't exist necessarily totally planar. Again, it might pucker a little bit, but it'll be close to that. Let's see, what would it be for a 5?
five-member grade. Those of you who are good at geometry, what is the angle that should exist in a pentagon? Well, what is the rule? It's n minus 2 times 180 divided by n or something like that?
108.
Okay, so 108, awfully close to that 109.5 degree angle. Now, and then if we add one more carbon in a hexagon, if it was flat, what would the bond angle be? 120 degrees. But you're not going to have 120 degrees in cyclohexane. Why? Because, again, this is a three-dimensional structure. And so it will try to adopt some kind of geometry, and it will adopt some kind of geometry, where every carbon gets pretty much its 109.5 degree angle. So three-membered rings, highly strained. Four-membered rings, strained, but you can form them. Penicillin has actually got a four-membered ring as one of the major structural elements of the compound. Then a five-membered ring, again, almost no strain, and a six-membered ring, effectively zero strain. So five and six-membered rings are the easiest ones to form. What do you think happens if you put a seventh carbon in?
Strain.
It actually becomes strained just a little bit again, and we'll talk about some of the reasons why. But from 7 through, I believe it's 11, there's a little bit of this ring strain that comes back. Past that point, the molecules get so huge that the atoms no longer are bumping into each other at all, and then all of those rings would be stable in terms of thermodynamics. But the larger ring you try to make, if you're trying to close the ring, then the larger number of carbons that you get, the harder it is to close that ring because the two ends are so far away from each other, the chain can flop around so much that it's difficult for those two ends to meet, to come together to form a ring. If we could go ahead and hit the lights for the moment. Let me write some of these things down that I just had talked about. So again, angle of strain is higher potential energy caused by bonds distorting, caused by their bond angles being pulled away from ideal values. So again, 80 degrees for a cyclopropane. Although I'm writing it flat on the paper, my memory tells me that it's more like 88 degrees for cyclobutane. So these are very strained. Is it actually better for everyone if we have some light and then some dark? Does it make it easier to take the notes? Yes? Okay, so maybe we'll just do it like this from now on, partial darkness. Hey, it's Halloween, right? Coming up? That's right, but Halloween falls on a Monday. So maybe if we had some snacks or something to help out with the exam, that might be appreciated. Any chance to eat is good for a college student, right? I can't tell you how many lectures in Berkeley that I ended up going to only because of the free donuts. So again, in cyclopentane, we're going to have roughly 108 degree angle, awfully close to that 109. And in cyclohexane, even then, again, on flat paper, a hexagon should have 120 degree angles. It doesn't. It will adopt that 109.5 degree angle because there's the room for it to do so. So these have little or no angle strain. Rings with 7 through 11 carbons have a very small amount of strain. Past 11 rings, again, have no strain. Now, some textbooks get really worked up over what does cyclopropane really look like? What does cyclobutane really look like? Cyclopentane.
But we are so commonly going to work just with the six-membered rings that I'm going to do like what your textbook does and only focus on the geometry of the six-membered rings. So cyclohexane has two principal lowest energy forms.
One of them is much lower energy than the other. And let me present the two forms to you. If you arrange the cyclohexane ring so that as you're going around the ring, you appear to have the same kind of zigzag shape that we expect in a straight chain compound, which actually, since I have not used models in front of you before, let me show you that when you start to link carbon to carbon to carbon, because of the 109.5 degree angles, since each carbon is tetrahedral in geometry, you can see that you get this natural zigzag pattern, which is exactly why I've been writing the zigzags down for the structures that you've seen so far. When you bring this around into a ring, you effectively are able to keep that zigzag pattern. So as I turn this around, you can see it's got that same kind of up-down geometry. Now, chemists sometimes are very imaginative, and so if I tilt this a little bit to the side, and if you imagine that I'm sitting down like on a chair, this is called the chair form of cyclohexane.
Again, chemists are sometimes imaginative, or maybe spend too much time smelling the ether in lab. Maybe a little bit of both. How do you write the chair form of cyclohexane? This is something you will need to get practice at because you will be doing it an awful lot. So there's different conventions. The most common one is to have two of the bonds, the ones at the left and right sides of the compound, slanting from lower left to upper right. So start by writing two parallel lines like that. Next, write two V's like this. And that is kind of a rough version, but a version of the chair form of cyclohexane. Before we continue with that, let me show you the other form that could be made, but let me show you how I'm going to do it. So I'm holding onto this structure, and I'm going to twist one of the carbons. Notice what happens, that the two carbons connected to it appear to pucker in the other direction. And so now I have this kind of structure where I've got two substituent points up at the top that are now pointed towards each other. Well, hopefully it would make sense that with these two groups pointed to each other, we're going to potentially run into that steric hindrance, that steric strain that we talked about the other day when we were talking about rotamers. We could also look along the bonds, and we're going to do this in a moment, and we can figure out that maybe there's some strain in the rotamers that form by doing. So this is a less favorable structure, and again, being creative, this was named the boat form of cyclohexane. I'm not going to actually write this one down, I just wanted to show you this is the other version that forms. The reason we care about this is if I start out with one form of cyclohexane, and let me put some substituents on here, you can see that the two substituents I've added to the ring are currently pointed straight up or down. And the way that I'm holding it, the one on the right, the green one, is pointed down. The one on the left, the red one, is pointed up. These are all single bonds here. So single bonds can rotate, right? So they'll rotate around. And if I do this kind of double flip, so I flip the carbon on the left, I flip the carbon on the right, notice what's happened. I've made another chair form, but the substituents that used to be pointed straight up and down are now pointed side to side instead. This process of going back and forth between the two possible forms of cyclohexane, this is called a ring flip. So we're going to build up to that, but let me give you a little terminology first. So this is the chair form. Let me rewrite it a little better. A little more clearly. And let me show you the different types of substituents that could be on here. So in green, I'll write all the lines that are pointed straight up and down from the structure. Now, how do you know which way to draw the line? How do you know whether you draw it up or draw it down?
We're not using dashes and wedges at the moment, but remember that when we saw dashes and wedges on Monday, where the two plane lines are pointed towards, the dash and wedge point away from that. You can use the same kind of reasoning here. You've got, for example, on the left of this compound, two lines that are pointing down and making a point. So the other two substituents have to point away from that position. One of them is going to point down, one of them is going to point up. Moving to another position of the molecule, back behind here. Again, you have the two plane lines that are part of the ring that are coming up, and so what other substituents you have must also be pointed in that up direction. So every other point you notice, the substituent that's vertical is pointed up, and then down, and then up, and then down, and then up and down. Since these positions are parallel to the axis that passes through this, if you just wanted to rotate the compound around like it was a circle, since they're parallel to that axis, these are known as axial substituents.
Now let me write another separate ring. And this is the trickier one, to write that other set of substituents.
So now on the left here, I have three substituents that I have drawn. Two of them are pointing down this way. It means the other one has to come out this direction. But you are going to make that same zigzag pattern. So coming from the right, if I'm going up, down, then the next one's going to be up. If I'm coming around to this other carbon, I go up, down, up. So the next one's going to be down.
Let me go ahead and write in all six of them. These are the equatorial substituents. Why? Because it's like they're coming out on the equator. Now we'll talk about the significance of something being at an axial position or an equatorial position a little later. What we're going to spend some time doing right now is learning about how to rewrite structures in line structure form or going back and forth to this chair form of cyclohexane. So let's start with a simple example. Let's say I have a cyclohexane ring that has two bromines attached. Notice that I've written both of these with wedges. So right now we're visualizing the molecule like we're looking down on top of the cyclohexane ring, like I'm looking just like this. So, if I had two bromines on neighboring carbons like this, how could I make it such that both of them were pointed up relative to my point of view? Well, am I going to start with an axial or an equatorial substituent? The answer is yes, because remember, this ring is really flipping back and forth. So no matter which one you start with, it's going to turn into the other one eventually. So choose one to start with. I'm going to choose this axial substituent. And although these are different colors, at the moment we're treating them both as bromine. Yes?
So is it up to us to like start with equatorial?
Once I'm done with these examples, then you'll know how to approach this kind of problem. So let me complete this one first, and then I'll come back and answer your question. So I'm going to start out just arbitrarily for the moment with one of the substituents being on the axial. You can see that the other axial position is pointed down. So another way of saying it is it's not the one pointed up. The one that's equatorial, it almost looks like it is just coming out straight at you, but it's not. It's really tipped up just a few degrees. If this is straight down, 109.5 means this is 19.5 degrees from horizontal. So it is pointing up just an itty bitty bit. But that means putting the substituent on that equatorial position is going to give you this correct kind of geometry. So this type of substituent pattern, where both of the substituents are on the same face of the ring, that's called cis. Just the same cis and trans terms that we saw for double bonds. Now let's go ahead and translate that to a chair form of cyclohexane. So draw chair cyclohexane. And because it's pretty easy to identify, I'll take this back carbon and make that an equatorial, or make that an axial position and make that where I put one of the bromines. Now let's say I wanted to put the other bromine in the front here. So the way I've written it up top, the top bromine would now correspond to the bromine I just wrote. The bottom bromine would have to therefore go at the equatorial position. There's this term that doesn't have anything to do with rings, but you just need to know what it means. Vicinal means neighboring. What's neighbor in Spanish?
Vecino.
So same word, same root word, neighboring. So vicinal means neighboring positions. And this would be referred to as a vicinal dihalide. There's another term that's very common. Geminal. Anyone good with languages can guess what that means? Same, or what does it literally refer to? Twins. Gemini, the twins. So geminal means double substitution. At one position. If I had a geminal diol, all means alcohol, diol two alcohols, geminal would mean two alcohols at the same carbon. So whenever you have a vicinal cis substitution pattern on a cyclohexane ring, one substituent is always cis and the other is always trans. Now, what if we wanted to do this? I'm sorry, yes, question.
If it's okay, if we put the other bromine, like...
In the back?
In the equatorial, but...
But further back. Yes, it is correct to do that. And I'm going to do that in a moment. But I want to show you something else to confuse you first. Which is to do a ring flip. So remember, a ring flip is the following. That if you take the molecule and you invert one side, invert the other, you're going to go back to a chair form again. Now, observe what happens during the ring flip. So, let me make it look like what we've got up here, though. One second. Some of these have been used too much. There we go. So... that's furthering back at the axial position. I have the substituent that's closer to you in the equatorial position. Currently, the one that's in back is red. Currently, the one that's in front is green. Let me do a ring flip. So I'll take one half the molecule and invert it. I'll take the other half the molecule, invert it. Notice that the one that's closer to you is now the axial position, and the one that's further away from you is now the equatorial position. That looks easy in the model. Let's do it on paper.
So, let me show you one answer that's often given. Because when I say that when a ring flip occurs, in fact, let me write that sentence out. A ring flip is an inversion of a cyclohexane ring in which axial substituents become equatorial and vice versa. So, in fact, let me make a new example. This would be better if I did make these two groups two different substituents. So I'll start with the same type of example. I'll make one of these a bromine, but I'll make the other chlorine. Let's make the bromine red and make the chlorine green, just for the models that I'm going to be showing you.
So I'm going to start out with bromine in back at the axial position, and then I'll move to the front and make chlorine in the equatorial position. Now let me draw the ring flip form, and let me show you an answer that's often given.
Because if you take me literally and take the bromine and put it instead at the axial, but put it now in the equatorial position, and I take the equatorial chlorine and now make it axial, this appears to be the ring flip version.
Take the model, do the ring flip. So again, bromine was axial in back, chlorine was equatorial in front. I'm going to now do the ring flip. And you can see, once I get it stabilized, there we go. We can see that we have the chlorine axial now, the bromine equatorial. But wait, chlorine's pointed down on that molecule, isn't it? And bromine is also pointed down on that molecule. If I try to make that match with this model, watch what happens. I'll just turn it 180 degrees upside down. But now look what we've got. We've got the chlorine axial, which would match this, but the bromine's in front of me. Here it's in back. This is a little bit out of order, but this is related to stereoisomers. What I did, if I took the bromine and put it up this other position, in order to do it, what I really did is I took the bromine off the molecule. I broke the bond, moved it to the other position, which means I didn't really do a ring flip. I just moved the bonds around. Same thing with the chlorine. In order to get it to this position, with this ring being in the same place, the chlorine I'd have to pluck off and then put in the other position. I just made the mirror image.
This is an improper ring flip. The axial and equatorial positions were exchanged, producing a mirror image molecule. If you don't understand it, don't believe it, don't see it, that's why you need models. Because this is a tricky one. This is the one that stumps people every quarter. Why is it that just flipping the two positions around would change the molecule around? On Friday, when we maybe do a wrap-up of this topic, I'll bring another model and show you how you do end up with the mirror image instead. So what would be the proper ring flip? Well, here's another way maybe that's simpler to explain. I had this molecule where before the two groups were pointed up at me. So why do I think I can get away with a molecule where the groups are pointed away from me? Why don't we just write it the way we want it?
Starting out with that same cyclohexane, I need to keep the relative positions of everything the same. So bromine, if we're going to do the alternate form, needs to be in equatorial position, but needs to be pointed up. Well, now it is. Chlorine needs to go into the axial position, but be pointed up, which now it is. Notice how this appears on paper to be scooted one carbon and back, but it isn't really. If we take the proper model and visualize it, this is exactly what we have. Chlorine in front at the axial position, bromine in back in the equatorial position. This is just some of the difficulty with working with cyclic structures on two-dimensional paper. So this is a correct inversion.
A proper ring flip, because the relative geometry, up versus down, is maintained.
Another way that sometimes people show the ring flips is to imagine this. The standard convention that I've been doing so far is the left-hand side is low and the right-hand side is high. When I ring flip, look what happens. The left-hand side goes high, the right-hand side goes low. So another way to avoid this problem is to write the cyclohexane backwards.
If I write it backwards, it's easy for me to make the bromine equatorial and the chlorine axial, whichever way you do it is fine, as long as again you maintain the proper orientation. In this case, translating back to the flat structure, the line structure, it would look like this for any of the correct representations. Questions up to this point? Yes?
Why is this equal to that?
Why are the two structures equal? Well, bromine is pointed up, isn't it? And so if I take my visualization point and fix it here, and I'm looking down on the molecule, well, bromine is higher up towards my eye, and it's pointed towards my eye, so I have it higher up on the structure and using a wedge. Then chlorine is clockwise one carbon away from the bromine. Over here, chlorine is clockwise one position away from the bromine. Chlorine is pointed straight up at my eye. I have a wedge, which also means it's pointed straight up. So the two structures match. Ring flip is where you do swap which ones are axial and equatorial. But notice that the starting structure and the end structure, everything is still pointed up. And so what I just demonstrated is how to avoid this incorrect case where I flip the geometry, which makes a mirror molecule. It is, that's why you have to practice. How many of you read this chapter ahead of time? That means the rest of you, you're just now experiencing how confusing this is. Everybody else might have read it and went, huh? But at least you saw it once. We will do more practice on this on Friday, but when is our exam?
Monday.
What is the topic for Friday? Let's all scramble and look, shall we? Topic for Friday is supposed to be chirality. That is exactly this idea of stereoisomers. That lecture will not be on the exam.
The lecture on Friday
will not be on the exam. So if we have a little extra time on Friday, we can go through and do some example problems. But that means if you don't read this chapter by Friday, then you don't get a chance to ask questions in class. So if you hadn't read the chapter yet, that means tonight you have to read it and come up with your questions by class by Friday, or else you just hopefully get it over the weekend without any help. Gotta stay on top in this quarter. Now let me move on to the next case, because maybe by doing more examples, it will start to make more sense. Yes?
In flipping these rings, we're not moving the carbons that bromine and chlorine are actually on. Right?
No, we're not. And might help, I forgot to do this, if I went back and numbered my carbon positions. How many of you have been practicing nomenclature? Yeah, nomenclature is on the test. So how many of you will now start practicing nomenclature? Yeah. I've numbered my carbons 1 through 6. I numbered the bromine as number 1 because if I'm trying to figure out what the most important substituent on a ring is, but if I could number it from different directions, I give the lowest number to the lowest alphabetical substituent. Bromo versus chloro, bromo would end up with, therefore, position 1. When numbering a ring compound, I wouldn't number this way. I wouldn't go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, because that would give me substituent numbers of 1 and 6. Instead, I'd go this direction because it gives me substituent numbers of 1 and 2. So now let's do that same kind of numbering with the correctly ring-flipped structure. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Where the carbons show up isn't a different position, but it has to be in order to maintain a correctly drawn structure. So no, the chlorines and the bromines are still exactly on the same carbons, but that doesn't mean they're on the same place on the paper. And that's the part that confuses people. Now let's do this next example so we can do some of these same visualization tricks over again. The other possibility for a vicinal disubstituted compound would be if one is pointed up and one is pointed down. This, when they're in opposite directions from each other, this is trans, which would be both substituents pointed opposite ways. And I'll make the same kind of statement I did for vicinally substituted compounds, that for vicinal trans-substituted cyclohexane rings, both substituents are either axial or equatorial. Again, I will arbitrarily start by an example showing both of them on the axial position. Why? Because it's easier to draw the axial positions. So, I need bromine pointed up towards me. That's the only reason why I will put bromine here. The way I've drawn the ring, I could have put the bromine at this carbon, or I could have put the bromine at this carbon. It doesn't matter as long as it's pointed up. Once I've established that bromine is up, then relative to it, chlorine is in the clockwise position. So I have to go clockwise around my structure to the next carbon over. That one has to be pointed down, and the only way we can have it pointed down is if the chlorine is also in the axial position. So as I said a moment ago, for vicinally substituted cyclohexane rings, if it's trans, then both will either be axial like this, or they'll both be equatorial. Now, before I write it down, take 20 seconds, 30 seconds, and you yourself try to draw the ring flipped version. How do you mean?
Oh, it can't point down. It, neither of those are correct. Let me, not to point out your mistake to give you a hard time, but other people will make this mistake as well. So let me show them what you did.
You have a cyclohexane ring. This is not the axial position because the two lines that are part of the ring are going up. So the axial position must be written up. There is no choice. The equatorial? That make that slanted to the left in that case, because it will... Well, you're asking me which way to do it. Do it to the left, because it would be parallel to the other lines already part of the structure. Do we have that ring flip form? Okay, well, let's see... One possible answer. I'm going to make my answer using the standard orientation for the cyclohexane ring, so the parallelogram lying to the right. I have to have both groups pointed up, and I need bromine in back of where the chlorine is. So I will just choose, no, not both of them up, I'm sorry, bromine up, chlorine down. So I'm going to choose this back position for my bromine. Once I have chosen it, whatever else I write on the structure, I just write in such a way that it's correct. So I strongly urge you not to memorize where these positions are, that you try to rationalize your way through it. So although I'm giving you these quick rules like cis vicinal means pointed up the same direction. Don't memorize that. It's just, I was just highlighting a fact that happens to be true. So bromine is pointed up, chlorine needs to be pointed down, and again it needs to be clockwise. So this would be one correct way to write the structure. Let's draw just another one. One other alternate. Let's say that I had chosen this for my position as bromine, because it is equatorial, which it should be if we ring flipped, and it's pointed up, which it needs to be. If I then continued on clockwise, that means the chlorine would have to be here, in the very front of the molecule. Now let me ask you this. Which of the two compounds, which two of the forms of the compound would be the preferential one? Which one is going to be lower in energy? And why would one be different in energy than the other?
The first one before the ring flip is the most stable.
And what was your answer?
Equatorial.
Equatorial. Well, equatorial is the lower energy form, yes. Why? Let's see. Because let's draw a general cyclohexane ring and imagine that we had two really big groups, both attached at the axial positions. If they were really big groups, then you can see on the model here, they're not that far away from each other. And so anything more than a hydrogen on there, you potentially are going to have steric hindrance.
not one carbon next to the other, but the fact that this axial substituent can bump into another axial substituent. That is called diaxial steric strain.
Two axial substituents are close enough together to experience steric hindrance. Therefore, when possible, the most sterically strained substituent will adopt the equatorial position. In this trans case, that means that the one where both are equatorial is the lowest energy form. Or, since we only got two, the lower energy form. This one, because they're axial, this is higher energy. So at equilibrium, you'll have both of these structures in solution. Because anytime you have an equilibrium, you automatically have a non-zero quantity, even if that non-zero quantity means one molecule out of a trillion. You'll have more, though, of this diequatorial one. Now, backing up to the previous problem, one of these substituents, the bromine or the chlorine, could be equatorial, but not both at the same time. Since bromine is bigger than chlorine, bromine's going to be the one that's equatorial. Now, it's not always the size of the atom that matters. There's some other complicating factors, but we have a table of energy values we could use if we're comparing. But since we know bromine is bigger than chlorine, we'll say that this is the higher energy because of the bromine being axial. And then this other one would be the lower energy form. Max.
Well, I was just wondering, is it common that when talking about these ring flips that we don't need dashes and wedges?
Yes, it is very common because it can get a little bit confusing because technically the ring itself would need to be drawn with dashes and wedges. Because if I'm looking at a cyclohexane ring,
right,
all of those bonds are either pointed away from me or towards me.
Okay.
You will see it done sometimes, particularly when we get to carbohydrates, to sugar chemistry. But most of the time we just avoid it.
But sometimes in 2D with all these lines, it's kind of hard to figure out.
It is. It is. And that's part of this visualization. That's why we're starting with visualization before we get to chemical reactions. How do you deal with looking at rotamers? How do you deal with looking at rings? How do you deal with looking at stereoisomers? That's what this whole week's about. Yeah?
For the metal where the bromine points upward and the chlorine points downward?
Yes.
Why is it higher than the ring? They're far away
from each other. Oh, they're far away from each other, but there's a hydrogen over there, isn't there? Well, it's close enough that even with just a hydrogen, you're still going to have axial steric hindrance. So the best possible case is for everything to be a hydrogen. As soon as you put one substituent on there, it'd rather be equatorial. Why equatorial? Because it doesn't bump into anything. It's pointed off in some other odd direction. The last thing I'm going to leave you with, which we'll have to spend just a couple minutes on Friday wrapping this topic up, is why is the chair form lowest energy, besides the fact that you have
the correct bond angles.
What if I set my viewpoint here and look along this bond? Well, to jump to the answer, because we're out of time, I'm going to see this. See, if I look along that bond, in back, I've got an axial position. So in back, I'm going to have something pointed straight up. In the front, I have an axial position pointed straight down. So in front, it's pointed down. And then we have the ring, which would connect around. But the important point is that every bond on this every bond in a chair structure has a staggered, not eclipsed, geometry. So we'll wrap up with that thought on Friday.